Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Kim Ullman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. We've got a handful of things to talk about tonight. I don't know if co-host Dave will be joining us or not. He had some things going on earlier today, and so I don't know if he will make it or not. But in the meantime, we have plenty of other stuff to talk about, so even if co-host Dave doesn't make it here tonight with us, you can join us at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And if you can hold your comments just till after the break, as usual, we will go through my commentary on the news. And then if you have things you would like to talk about in regards to what we've already talked about in the first half of the show or anything else Liberty-related, feel free to call at area code 858-683-1326. So to get things started tonight, we start, as usual, with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, when I'm elected, I'll make sure fat cats and highly paid lobbyists cannot sabotage our delicious apple pies. Yeah, you know, they're silly. Let's see. Also, something I'm going to try to do every week if I have time is find some interestingly silly correlations. We talked about this last week, and we've talked about it a month or so ago, about the spurious correlations and the sillinesses and why it's important to realize that correlation is not causation. And it is very important to know the difference between the two. And as such, I want to emphasize that at least from time to time, but I'm going to try to do it every week. So this week's spurious correlation is that the marriage rate in Florida correlates with the national rate of drivers killed in a collision with a car, pickup truck, or van. So the marriage rate in Florida correlates with the national statistics on drivers killed in the collision with a car, pickup truck, or van. All right. So anyway, and by the way, of course, the marriage rate had nothing to do with people getting killed, you know, all joking aside. Anyway, one of the things that's out there, somebody wrote a computer program to actually go out and properly redistrict state, done strictly based on population, starting in one corner and moving to the other. It's a pretty interesting thing. I think that this past redistricting saw the importance of why we need to have an outside group do this. There was some serious shenanigans that went on with this. I actually liked the Democratic plan for the first and second districts. And in fact, the computer generated something that looks a whole lot like what Democrats had proposed for the first and second congressional district. The real difference is that the computer here generated basically cutting Louisville in half, which is a terrible idea, and had that in the second district and then in the third district, I guess, or in the sixth, I don't know, it doesn't matter, it was in another district. And, you know, my problem with this, with what we've got, is that the first district, if you go out and look at a map of the state of Kentucky, and you look at what the first congressional district looks like, it is absolutely ridiculous. And in fact, the 6th district, they tweaked and twisted that to try to save Ben Chandler, and it didn't work. And so now, courtesy of some short-term thinking, we're stuck with goofy districts for the next decade, well, less than a decade, in theory. But I mean, the thing is legislative districts are not supposed to be about incumbent protection. They're supposed to be about representing the people of that district. Now, our districts have gotten way, way, way too large. The Constitution stipulates that there shall be no fewer than 30,000 people, and I have to use people in quotes with an asterisk, and remembering that there was the silly three-fifths clause that was, well, I say silly, it was a terrible thing to consider people three-fifths of a person. But if you take that out of it, there were roughly 30,000 people congressional district. I believe the original Congress had somewhere in the neighborhood of 32,000 or 33,000. Again, with people in quotation marks. What we have today is almost 725,000 people per congressional district. And in fact, in Kentucky, if you were to evenly divide it, it's a little over 723,000 people per U.S. congressional district in the state of Kentucky. The problem is that it's really hard to be representative of 700,000 people. I mean, that's kind of crazy, right? How can you properly represent 700,000 people? Is it even possible to know 700,000 people? And so I do think that having some sort of process, some sort of nonpartisan, a computer program with the right parameters could do the right thing. Right? If we took and said, okay, you need to start in the east, move your way west, and we want things to be the tightest, most contiguous configuration with the fewest number of counties split into chunks, because that in Kentucky is a big no-no, is splitting counties. We want to avoid that as much as we can. So if we can get the fewest split counties, the tightest packed districts, if we can put that into a computer program, not only would it be good for our U.S. congressional districts, it would be good for our state house and state senate districts. And I do think that's important. I think it's important that we have proper representation based off of a number of factors. The other thing to take into account, of course, is things like metropolitan areas, right? So we wouldn't want to split Louisville in half. That would be nuts to split Louisville in half. I think it's very wise to have Louisville have its own representative, someone who actually cares very deeply about Louisville. I think that's a good idea, right? I mean, don't you? I hope so. So anyhow, that's kind of my thought process, if you will, behind what we need to have for congressional districts and redistricting. I think it would be very wise to put something in place to ensure that the districting is not subject of gerrymandering to protect the politicians of today. Because if you think about it, a decade is a really long time. It's a really long time. I don't know. I'm trying to remember when everyone got into office. I think Guthrie was in 2006. And it's possible that Guthrie will be there for another decade, which would put him at, 16 years at the next redistricting when it takes effect. Whitfield, out in the first district, I don't even know when he was elected. Sorry, guys, in the first district, you guys know you're just like Northern Kentucky. We're all ignored. If you're not Lexington or Louisville or Eastern Kentucky, whatever. But, and of course, Hal Rogers has been there since, I think, the 1800s, and, has his name over half of Eastern Kentucky. I think we ought to, actually, I'd like to lobby to have Eastern Kentucky secede from Kentucky, and we can call it Hal Rogers. Call it Hal Rogers. He can have it, especially now that we can't even get the coal out of it. I think it'd be great. Let's just call it Rogersville or Rogerston or something. I mean, Hal Rogers' name is on half of this area anyway, so let's just give it to Hal. Huh? What do you think? Eastern Kentucky, we can break them off, call it Hal Rogers. Sounds good to me. But the point is that we do need to have proper redistricting, not for protecting incumbents, but to represent the people. Part of that is increasing the number of U.S. representatives so that there's a more representative look of the state. That first district just drives me nuts. I mean, that thing goes all the way from western Kentucky's furthest most tip, which is Kentucky Bend, and almost touches Lexington. I mean, it's a huge, huge swath of the state. Take a look at it. Google Kentucky First Congressional District. It'll probably land you on Wikipedia. I'm not even sure Wikipedia has updated maps yet. But take a look at it. It's close enough. You'll see what I mean. It's nuts. Crazy lines. So we should. We should be lobbying for a nonpartisan follow the Constitution, because our Constitution, Supreme Court rulings, and the courts for that Constitution are very clear on what they're supposed to do. So we should be having the computer program come out with the most constitutional solution to every single redistricting process, because that's what's fair. It's not about protecting an incumbent. It's about doing the right thing per our state constitution. To see an amendment for that. But anyway, speaking of amendments, the Democrats are, again, trying to push for a U.S. Constitutional amendment to the United States Constitution to allow the reinstatement, or basically to overturn, the Citizens United decision. And, of course, you know, it's a convoluted thing that they're proposing. Nobody is actually proposing what I believe would be something the Tea Party and Occupy and Main Street America could get behind, which would be an amendment to end corporate personhood, the idea that a corporation is a person. Yes, corporations are a group of people, but each of those individuals as a within the corporation have the right to act individually already. Why is it that because they are also now part of a corporation, they get to act again? And because of the Citizens United ruling, only overturning the limits on corporations, corporations actually now have more rights than individuals do when it comes to electoral spending on electoral politics. Now, there are already instances where corporations have more power than individuals. There's no doubt about it. Right now, in our electoral system, independence, there is no mechanism for an independent to ever be on par to ballot access as a Republican or Democratic candidate. There is no mechanism at all. The D's and the R's have to collect two signatures for any partisan office for which they seek election. But an independent must collect between 25 and 5,000 no matter what, because the state law does not provide a mechanism for an independent to ever be equal to the candidates from the Democratic and Republican parties. They've actually set up a threshold that's rather ridiculous, even for so-called third parties, Libertarian, Green, Constitution, whatever party. It's extremely, extremely difficult to be able to be on par with Democrats and Republicans. And for independents, it's impossible. Political parties are corporations, right? Think about it. What's a corporation? It's a group of people governed by a governing document coming together for a common purpose. It's a corporation. It's a party. A political party is a corporation. The political parties actually today have more power than an individual candidate. And we see that because there are other sections of state law and federal law that allow for different fundraising mechanisms for D's and R's and the favored sons of those particular political parties. So even if a so-called independent tries to run as a D or an R, the political machine itself as a corporation does have the right to say, well, this is really our guy. This is the one we want, and we don't want this guy over here. I actually do think that political parties do have the right, the leadership of the party has the right to make that determination. I think it's an extraordinarily dangerous and dumb process, getting involved in a partisan primary. It's a really good way to get thrown out on your butt and cause all kinds of division within your party. But it's within their right to do so, because they are a private corporation. So why is it that people as part of a private corporation have more rights than those who choose not to be part of that particular corporation or no corporation whatsoever? So the Democrats are trying to undo the Citizens United decision by passing a new constitutional amendment to recreate the same law that was there, but this time in a constitutional amendment. And I would say to unto them, and I say to you, we need to be supportive of the end of corporate personhood. Every individual, every single person has rights. We are individual rights. Individual rights. Corporations are things. They are a construct of man, regulated by government. And I would say that corporations should not be people. However, I would also say in return, corporations should not be taxed. Individuals are individuals. They're alive for an income tax, but if there is to be a tax, it should be applied generally and without special exception is what I'm trying to say. There should be no exceptions, no special loopholes. That's what I'm trying to say. Broadly and evenly and fairly to all individuals. Pass an amendment. Let's say corporations aren't people. Corporations can't be taxed. Let's pass that. If corporations aren't people, they can't spend money on elections. They also aren't taxed, but that's okay. So long as they're paying people, those people who are being paid are getting taxed. I'm a little bit passionate about this. Just knocked the headphone off of my head here. The point is, we have the ability to really solve a real problem here, corporate personhood, something that if you ask the Tea Party, if you ask Occupy, if you ask Main Street Americans, do you think that corporations are or should be people? The answer will be no. Of course it's no. Corporations aren't people. It's common sense. And anyone that tries to tell you otherwise, well, they're a group of people. Yeah, they're a group of people. But why should that group of people have more rights than an individual? They should not. They should not. They should have the same rights as an individual, regardless of what group they choose to associate with or not. Period. That's fair. That's what's fair. Equal protection under the law, and the lack of associating with a corporation should not determine what you can and cannot do, or the height of the hurdle you have to overcome in order to do it. So I support a constitutional amendment, but only if it ends corporate personhood. And while we're at it, let's get rid of corporate taxes and let individuals decide. Let individuals – and really, corporate taxes, it doesn't break my heart either way. It's more about transparency. Corporate taxes just end up being hidden taxes anyway, so let's get rid of them anyhow. It doesn't break my heart that they're being taxed. It's that people don't realize they're being taxed and that tax is being passed along to them, and it distorts the market. But – while we're there and while we're amending it, let's take corporations completely out of the picture. Let's say they can't spend corporate money and they can't be taxed. Or they can spend corporate money, but only to buy things. They can't spend on elections and they can't be taxed. Sounds good to me. All right. Oh, boy. Here's another story I wanted to get to real quick. The Mars project, trying to get to Mars. There's been a lot of talk about trying to get to Mars. I think we talked about this already, but this is a news story of June 4th. I know we talked about this because Mars is a topic of mine. I I'm big into Mars exploration, and I think I talked about this before, but real generally, I did a report in high school about what it would take to colonize Mars, and it is doable. If you stayed there for any length of period of time, you would not be able to come back due to the change in gravity, but it is doable. Mars is able to be colonized. And, boy, it's been years and years and years. The one book I remember that I was part of the research was a book called Mars Beckons. There's all kinds of things that could be done. Heck, for that matter, we could have, with the rovers, when we sent those up to Mars, we could have went ahead and put some bacteria that actually can survive in Mars's current atmosphere and let them just start chugging. Because what they do is they produce oxygen. And oxygen, when it refracts off the sunlight, turns into ozone. And that's what we need for an environment, as an ozone layer. So anyway, the point is, there's a story here that came out, Washington Post, basically saying the National Research Council says that NASA's strategy cannot get humans to Mars, period. That given what NASA is doing right now, we cannot put a person on Mars. And there's no doubt in my mind, putting a person on Mars is going to be phenomenally expensive. I mean, if you look back on it, putting a man on the moon was phenomenally expensive. And the problem is now, our economy's all dorked up. We don't have extra cash kicking around anymore. We're $16 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars in debt. Actually, we may be at 17 now. I haven't checked lately. But there's absolutely no way, given the current deficit, given the current economy, to get to that in a minute, that we can afford to send someone to Mars. And it's sad. Really, honestly, it's sad. Elon Musk over at Tesla and SpaceX, Musk wants to get us to land on Mars. But, you know, and I think this person's correct, member of the committee, John Summer, unrealistic to expect a commercial company to spend the money to take on the risk that's necessary to achieve human exploration on the Martian surface. And I tend to agree. It's unfortunate. But I do hope that it's in my lifetime. But in order to do that, we're going to have to get a whole bunch of other stuff in order. We have to get our house in order. We have to get spending under control. We have to get employment under control. We've got to get our stuff under control because it is our prosperity that allowed us to go to the moon. It's our prosperity that allowed us to spend money on space exploration at all. And if we have no prosperity, then there can be no exploration because we don't have the money. We don't have the money to spend on anything else other than trying to keep people from starving to death, or at least just paying them to stay home and not work. And so this kind of dovetails nicely into my next topic. Why is the economy still a wreck? I mean, everybody knows the recession started in 2006, 2007, 2008, somewhere in there, depending on which measurement you use. I tend to say end of 2006 is where it really actually started. That was where we peaked, and then we started going down and down and down. But we've never recovered. If you go out and look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you'll see that the labor participation rate went down, and it has never come back up. Labor participation rate is the percentage of able-bodied Americans that are actually in the workforce right now. And so while we have these goofy unemployment numbers, because understand, they dorked around with unemployment many times over the course of 20, 25 years, going all the way back to the first Bush, Bush 41, and probably before that, but I just know Bush 41 did it. I know Clinton did it. I know Bush 43 did it. And Obama didn't change anything. He hasn't changed the formula. This is the people before him were dorking with the formula to try to make themselves look good. Thanks. Appreciate that. we look real good. We somehow unemployment's at like 6%, but half the country's not working. Thanks. Why? Why is half the country not working? That's the big question, right? Well, I've got a nifty little chart here about the cumulative number of rules in the office of the Federal Register, right? And rules are laws that are then interpreted, and they create regulations. And these are the regulations, the rules, that came out of federal laws passed between 1976 and 2009. So in 1976, the number of rules on the books was about 12,000-ish, 12,000. We'll call it 13 just to be safe. It's less than 13, but it's 12.5, let's say. Today, well, actually, I shouldn't say today. Through 2009, the number of rules on the book has almost crossed, boy, it's hard to even read. Oh, here we go, 1976. Cumulative final rules was 7,401 in 1976. 7,401. Excuse me. 77 was when they went up to 14,500. Today, or not today, in 2009, the cumulative number of rules is 169,593. And that's just at the federal level. Doesn't count the state. And at the same time, the feds have been doing all this. So have all the states. For that matter, a bunch of counties, cities, taxing entities, and goofy weird districts, ad valorem districts, blah, 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 blah districts, all with their rules, all with their stipulations, regulations. The problem is the game keeps changing. The game keeps getting harder. Problem with the game getting harder is that the big guys can afford, and most of them have, on-staff attorneys, people who are there anyway, hired to make sure that the company doesn't run afoul of the law, or if it does, to mitigate the problem and resolve it out of court and keep the costs low. And these are attorneys that are on staff. They're on retainer. They're already there. They're already a cost built in. And when you have, oh, I don't know, let's say 10,000 employees, you can afford one or two of those to be a lawyer. But when you're a company of five people or a company of 50 people, you can't afford to have an attorney full-time. As you approach 50, you might be able to keep one on retainer. But then, courtesy of the new laws and regulations, there's a whole other set of laws that kick in when you hit 50 employees. And what is 50 employees? Is it 50 actual physical employees, or is it 50 work hour employees? Or I mean, they keep changing all the rules. Business owners get frustrated. And potential business owners get frustrated and never even bother trying to start because it's too much of a pain in the butt. Why would you intentionally subject yourself to the nightmare that is being an employer? Now, being a sole proprietor is bad enough, but to be an employer means that you're now having to comply with all this employment law. Hiring one person is such a giant hurdle to overcome now. Many business owners just aren't willing to do it. And then at the same time that all these new rules are happening, we have exceptions being thrown in left and right and every which way. We have a great story here. This is from about a month and a half ago. Wow, I've been sitting on this one for a bit. But basically, the Chrysler bankruptcy, the headline here is Chrysler bankruptcy still affecting economy. And the point is that they specifically ran bankruptcy law and all these programs. The reality is the car companies, GM, Chrysler, the ones that had to be bailed out. Remember, Ford didn't take the bailout. I don't know if they had to or not or what they did. I don't remember. But they at least said they didn't take the bailout. GM, Chrysler, these companies should have been allowed to fail. They should have been allowed to go to bankruptcy court. They should have been allowed to have their assets sold to the highest bidder. And the people say, oh, man, you know, there's nothing good would have came out of that, man. I mean, look at all these people and the pensions and, oh, well, first of all, the pensions were unrealistic. And I do feel bad for people that they worked all their lives and were promised a ridiculously high pension that could never, ever come to fruition. And it is an important lesson. It would have been an important lesson anyway for anyone else who still had a traditional pension that, hey, you know, just because the company gives you a pension and promises you all this silliness is, your union, which, by the way, all these guys got their pensions and that through their union or because they had a union and their union insisted upon it, your union should probably take better care of looking to make sure that the pension is actually solvent. Yeah, that the money's really there. That'd be a good idea. The problem is that we've now sent mixed messages to the market. Too big to fail. Well, how big is too big to fail? Is it just a couple of car manufacturers? Well, no. We know the banks, too. So where's the line drawn on too big to fail? And, oh, wait. Oh, because we did the too big to fail on the banks, we added a whole bunch of new regulations that, oh, just happened to also squish all the small community banks because they can't afford them, because they can't afford to comply with them, because they financially can't afford the things that they were requiring, which was like 3 years of FDIC insurance payments up front. All of a sudden, the market cannot adjust to because the rules keep changing, and so people are just frozen. They're petrified because they can't act. The market acts when there's an opportunity to make money, and if the opportunity to make money is in question, there will be no action. Well, there shouldn't be no action. There will be crazy venture capital action, but not normal action, not Main Street USA. Joe decides, hey, I got laid off. I've always wanted to do this other thing. I'm just going to do it because I can't get a job any other way. That's the way we used to come out of recession. We can't do that anymore because the rules, there's so many rules, and the rules keep changing. How do you compete? You can't. That's why we're still in recession. That's why we haven't recovered. And all the while, what does that mean? That means that while the economy continues to tank and we continue to borrow money like it's going out of style, we can't even do the things that we're supposed to be doing. And we're spending all this money on stupid crap, things that people don't actually care about. If you ask them the difference between spending money on, for instance, should we be giving grant money to health departments to push smoking bans, or should we be repairing our infrastructure and, for instance, in Louisville and Northern Kentucky, putting in bridges that bring commerce in and out of the state. What do you think is more important? Bridges and infrastructure and commerce or smoking ban? But we're spending money, millions of dollars a year, on smoking bans while our infrastructure crumbles to the point where, again, here a story from the end of April, about a month ago, the feds are looking at passing a law, or I guess they're passing a law to repeal an old law, to allow states to start charging tolls on existing corridors. In other words, existing highways. They're called corridors in the greater scheme of things, right? The corridor to go through from Cincinnati to Lexington is I-75. Corridor to go from Cincinnati to Louisville is along I-71. That's the corridor. They're going to allow the addition of tolls to existing infrastructure in order to pay for it because we've been paying for stupid garbage instead of paying for infrastructure. There's a problem. The feds are really screwed up. That's really what it comes down to. And some of this comes down to people start blaming the feds for not doing enough, and the reality is they're doing too much. We're spending money on garbage and letting the things that we care about crumble. In many ways, it's the way that over in Ohio, oh, well, you won't give us the tax levy for the schools? Well, rather than cut after-school underwater basket weaving programs, we're going to cut school busing. Because school busing hurts. It's a pain point. We certainly can't cut the underwater basket weaving after-school intramural league. We have to cut busing, even though they're the same cost. It drives me crazy because we're being held hostage. We're being held hostage by our own government. It's nuts. Why do we let it happen? Because we don't have a loud enough voice. Because Congress doesn't represent us because there's 725,000 people per congressperson. That's why. That's why. Congress isn't representative of the people, period. And that's a real big problem. I am way, way over for the break. I'm going to take a quick break here. I see we've got a couple people actually called into the show. If you want to talk after the break, be sure to hit the number one key right now. And in the meantime, I am going to go ahead and send us to break. When we come back, we'll finish up. If there's anybody who wants to talk, we'll do that. And you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in a few minutes.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Forget all this mess I'm in. I can stand Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network, and we are here live every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, here from 7 to 8, and we do enjoy having people call into the show. Those that are listening, we just check with them, and they do not want to come on. That's fine. That is an option, by the way. If you're having problems with the player, you can always call in 858-683-1326 and just listen. And that works too. And we do have people that choose to do that because sometimes the BTR interface acts not so well. So we apologize for those that it does. You know, it is what it is, and we can't control that. But hopefully it works well enough for all of you. So I've got a handful of other things that I wanted to get to tonight. And since nobody's called in, I'm going to jump through them because, hey, I'm going to do it. And it gets us caught up on the show content, too. One of the things that's been kicking around, and it's kind of cooled off a little bit, has been the talk about raising minimum wage. And, you know, I once wrote a small paper on minimum wage and why minimum wage doesn't work today. The core reason why minimum wage doesn't work today is because we have a fiat currency. That's really the core reason why it doesn't work. At one time, you could have made the case that minimum wage could have worked because there was a finite supply of money. A finite supply of money means that there's only so much to go around. And if you want something done and the minimum wage requires that you pay someone more to get that work done, then you are, in essence, transferring wealth forcibly, which I'm against. But again, this is not about philosophy. This is about workability. You can make the case that a minimum wage forced the transfer of wealth down the line. Great. The problem is that we have a fiat currency. They just print more money. So every time they fire up the printing presses, and make no mistake, they've been fired up for a long time, and they've been in overdrive since the recession started. Every time they fire up the printing presses, your dollar is worth less. Because at the end of the day, now, with a fiat currency, the value of a dollar essentially is the value, the true value of the entire United States economy divided by the number of dollars in circulation. That's how much a dollar is basically worth. And so with a fiat currency, and in case some of the listeners don't know, a fiat currency means it just poofed into existence. It's not backed in anything. The full faith and credit of the United States government. Yeah. That's running a little shallow these days. The problem with a fiat currency is it doesn't mean anything. And so we did see, for instance, Bitcoin, which in essence is another fiat currency, go way up in price, despite tampering from outside forces, despite people dorking around with it, despite the thefts that occurred and the exploits and everything else, basically just as legitimate as the Federal Reserve. And so long as there is a fiat currency, minimum wage is not a solution. It's not even a workable solution. And again, philosophically, I'm not really for a minimum wage either. I don't think that the government has a role to come in and say, you individual and you business owner individual, I am going to control the nature of the relationship between employer and employee. I don't like that scenario philosophically. But even outside of the philosophy, it's just never going to work so long as there's a fiat currency. They just print more. Meanwhile, every time they do jack up minimum wage, what it in essence does, all it does is move the economic floor up, right? So instead of people getting ahead, you're actually resetting everyone that's between the old minimum wage and the new minimum wage back to zero, back to the floor, the economic floor, which is the new minimum wage. And I experienced this personally. When minimum wage went up from $4.25 to $4.75, was 6 months after I started working, and I worked my tail off to get that first 50-cent raise. I got the raise, and a month later, minimum wage went up. And when they did that particular minimum wage increase, it took effect immediately. And so basically, my working my tail off for 6 months was completely wiped out by an act of Congress. I could have done just enough to get by and not get fired, and would have been the same. And now the big jump that they're talking about making from 7.25 up to 10.50 or 11 or 10.10, there's a handful of different proposals out there. There's been serious talk about how that's going to cause more machination and less people involved in basic manufacturing, and specifically in the fast food industry. As one who's on the road a lot, I feel the pinch. I've seen the prices go up. It's amazing to me. You know, and part of this is getting older, and, you know, I feel like back in my day and waving my cane in the air like some old fart. But, man, you know, when I started first driving 20 years ago, you could get a full meal at McDonald's for $3.17. It was $2.99 plus tax. $3.17. Today, that same meal is costing you $7. The economic pressures are still there just because, oh, well, minimum wage is 7.25 now. That didn't make anything better. You're still paying a lot of money. You're paying more money for the same food. And minimum wage is a chicken and egg problem, right? The problem is that you're always chasing, but you're also then pushing. If you raise minimum wage, then you're going to increase the cost of goods. If you increase the cost of goods, then people won't be able to afford them over time. And as people aren't able to afford them over time, people demand a higher minimum wage, and we begin the cycle all over again. And we're not addressing the core problem. Why is our money worth less than it was yesterday? That's the conversation that needs to be had, but no one looks past. No one looks at that. Why is my dollar worth less than it was yesterday? And when we move the conversation to that, then we might get some answers. Then we might have a serious debate on our economic policy as a whole. Got 10 minutes left and so much to do. I saw a story, boy, this has been over a month ago, about the feds wanting to have the right to basically search your car to be able to come onto your property and search your car. National Highway Transportation Safety Administration wants to make sure that all these cars meet the new federal fuel economy standards. At the same time, there's a story that came out, I just saw, and I don't have it up here, but of a police, I believe this is another instance in Tennessee. I don't know what's going on in Tennessee with the cops down there, but where police searched a vehicle parked along the street. Actually, I'm sorry, it was parked in a private parking lot where they claimed to have smelled the odor of marijuana from the passenger side, which is kind of weird that it would only be the passenger side, but okay. And they ran a canine past it. And the canine unit, the dog, alerted, which we've seen, if you haven't seen the videos out there about how they can get dogs to alert, well, go Google that. And they broke into this dude's car and searched it. And he wasn't even there to protest, to give consent, or to protest the search. You know, wasn't there to witness the search, wasn't there to do anything. The dude wasn't even there. Private property of an individual on private property of some other individual, or private property of the same individual, either way, it's private property, a vehicle, on someone else's private land, and federal agencies, police agencies, believe they have the right to come on to that property just to search, in theory, to see that somebody's complying with the law. And this is a really dangerous thing. Chomsky, Noam Chomsky had an article out, and for those of you that don't know who Noam Chomsky is, he is basically, people have called him all kinds of things, but basically he's a left libertarian. He's not big into property rights. It's kind of an interesting section of libertarianism, but they're mostly concerned about individual rights. Oftentimes they don't believe in other forms of private property, whatever. Chomsky just wrote that basically we're heading down the wrong path. Obama, despite his promises, has made things worse. And the writes that the principle of the presumption of innocence, which dates back to the Magna Carta 800 years ago, has been dismissed to oblivion. And I think that that's the crux of it. We are not considered innocent until proven guilty anymore. Whether it's traveling through an airport or traveling down the road or at home on the telephone or the internet, the government is now doing things to check up on you to make sure you're not doing anything wrong. That is a presumption of guilt without due process. It's a big deal. It's a really, really big deal. We need to fight, not physically, but due process, to protect the presumption of innocence, to protect our individual rights. Without due process, folks, the whole thing falls apart. Civilized society, our entire civilized society, is built upon due process. If we don't have it, we don't have a society. We have a tyranny. Got 5 minutes left. Boy, this is going to be fun. I need to get it through this Obamacare stuff. There's been a lot of grumbling. Now that we're through most of the primaries and the establishment Republicans won a whole lot of the primaries this year, entertainingly calling themselves the outsiders. This is the funniest new thing in the playbook, is people who are backed by the establishment claiming that their other opponent is part of the good old boy network and that they're, you know, they're part of the establishment. But me, Mr. Candidate, even though they are backed by the establishment and funded by the establishment, I'm an outsider. I'm a reformer. Basically, they're trying to play the Tea Party line without saying the word Tea Party against people who otherwise are the outsiders, the reformers. And I think that's pretty interesting. I mean, we just saw that with McConnell and Bevin. They just beat the snot out of Bevin, claiming he was some sort of insider, tarp-loving whatever on the Republican side. I've seen it in local primaries as well, and this seems to be the tactic of the playbook of the Republican establishment this time as well. Oh, yeah, this person over here, they're an outsider, they're a reformer, but really they're not. Sounds good. That's why people vote for them. Races are too big for people to know any different. After the wave of all these primaries, many of the Republicans are now backing off their promise to repeal Obamacare. And this has many Tea Partiers all up in arms. What the heck? Why? What? Wait, what? Huh? They're upset. Well, I can tell you why. It's because there are certain polls out there that are now showing that are not Republicans, Democrats and independents, large majority of Democrats, many independents, the majority of independents, and even some Republicans want to tweak Obamacare rather than repeal it or even do the repeal and replace. They want to just, quote-unquote, fix it rather than repeal and replace. And in some ways, it makes sense. Psychologically, people reject large, radical change. That's why Obamacare itself has never been accepted by the majority of the American people, because it was a radical change, and it's still being implemented. I mean, it would have been better if they just went ahead and crushed that sucker in 1 year and then let it flow for a number of reasons. But once they've got it passed through, they crammed it through, they've been dilly-dallying on the implementation because they know it's broken. They know it. And so it's what it is, right? I mean, it's there. But the majority of Americans, based on many polls, and the problem is you don't know the methodology of these polls, right? I mean, there are ways to influence the outcome of polls. And I worry that some of the people taking these polls, the big money interests that are getting all that grant money that I talked about earlier in the show, yeah, they're the ones that are running these polls using the grant money. They show in these polls that the majority want it fixed, not repeal and replace. And so, as a result, Republicans are backing off the repeal and replace because it is electoral politics and it is an election year. And more than anything, they want to be in charge of the Senate again. They want to be in charge. And some of the silliness, some of the silly things, oh, yeah, we'll impeach Obama. Yeah, right, whatever. You're not going to impeach Obama, please. So many reasons why you would never, the Republicans would never do that. It's not even worth going over all of them. I don't have enough time. But the point is that we're now at a point where Obamacare is here-ish, completely here. It's broken, there's no doubt. But for the sake of politics, Republicans are now backing off repeal, and now they're going to fix. And that's what's really going on. That's why it's not being repealed. And it was an interesting quote from, what is this here? This was Republican Leadership Conference that happened a week or two ago, whenever it was. Ted Cruz actually said something I agree with, which is that Republicans and voters in general need to quit being against things and start saying what they're for and start pushing for those things that they're for. And we've talked about that on the show before. That's what the country needs. That's what politics needs. That's what the country needs. We need people telling us, how are you going to fix the problems? We know what the problems are. We want answers. We want solutions. Give us those answers. Give us those solutions. Folks, I'm way out of time here. Thank you very, very much for tuning in again. Tune into the rest of the shows on the network Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time as well. And until next week, hope you all have a good week, and thanks for tuning in. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My Matters Radio Network.